We Talk Podcast presents...
What it is, what it do, welcome to a special part duh of One Fall with Joshua Adam William Arbuthnot, Joel Johnson, and of course, he came back for round two, Mo.
Yeah, with me on, it might be part duh.
It may be part duh. So, Mo, Reign of Honor, you wanted to come on and talk about this originally. Now we're going to get into the news of professional wrestling, a lot to cover as far as matches and all that good stuff go. So, Reign of Honor, final battle. I hated the ending of this.
Really?
Because I figured you're in Chicago, you have Colt Cabana, Lethal's had the title for a while, it was a really hot match, I thought it was the wrong time to do what they did with the Bullet Club.
You know what? I'm watching it. It felt like an angle from a bygone era to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like, yeah, I mean, it's so NWO.
Mm-hmm.
It was so NWO. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If they had just scaled it back a little bit, I probably would have liked it better without them super kicking Kevin Kelly and Steve.
I did like the super kick counter, though.
Well, that was hilarious. But
yeah. Especially since they didn't do super kicks in the prior match.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it was interesting that way. But also, this the Young Bucks dad and everything. Like, it's just like, it somehow in trying to do this really, really hot angle, you managed to do something. I wouldn't say I hated it, but because I thought Adam Cole was a star. And I do think he's a star, right?
Yeah, you put him at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think he's, like I said, I think he's the best guy they've ever had in ROH. Like, at least... At that point in his career, I don't know if he will achieve the great success or be as good as what CM Punk became or Daniel Bryan became or AJ Styles, obviously. But at that point, like, this guy's really young too. Like, he's like 25, 26 still, like, very young guy. You know, I mean, old compared to Joel, but young. Yeah. Joel, what are you? 13?
12 and a half.
I thought you were 5.
I'd much rather be 5 than 30.
Well, he was allowed in the Civil War, but I think you need provincial like help with that one.
Yeah, you get with his parents. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, what about the rides? Can you ride them all at the Stampede?
I don't know. I mean, we'll have to find out next year at WrestleMania in Orlando if he can get on. Maybe he can get on Space Mountain. I don't know, but he won't be getting on Ric Flair's type of Space Mountain. If you don't know what I'm saying.
Well, maybe I'll get on Charlie Flair's Space Mountain, if you know what I'm saying.
Woo! Yeah.
When you're trying to do a really, really hot angle, when you start throwing in too much like that, we start throwing in super kicking the dad and the everything, it takes away the seriousness, and it becomes like, oh, look, it's a fake wrestling show.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, yeah, they super kick their dad, this guy, and they super kick Taylor Hendricks, and it's like, and nothing really gets sold, and all of a sudden it becomes, instead of becoming, in order to, like, you remember when the Nexus ripped the hell out of Raw? That was serious.
Yep.
And that's why it was effective. This, to me, could have been a lot more effective if it didn't feel like we're just having fun.
I also think it just really took away, Mo, from... You know, Joel and I don't talk about Ring of Honor here as enough as we can. And, you know, I'm a casual wrestling fan, especially right now with everything going on with the NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs and baseball and everything. That my attention for wrestling is not as much as it will be maybe in the summertime or other times. But this Ring of Honor match with Colt and Lethal really caught my attention. And I love the buildup. I love the Colt got the roll-up pin on him and he had a win on him and they were going to Chicago and... It just built up, and the match was going pretty good. And I just thought, he ruins a really good potential moment there. Even if Cole loses, I thought they should have just stayed with a straight match and maybe afterwards attack. I think the only positive is maybe Jay Lethal's now a babyface.
Yeah, well, I think he is a babyface now. But, you know, Colt looked good in the match. Like, Colt Cabana is not – he's not – somebody I don't think he's the right guy to put that belt on. I don't.
I would agree. I just thought it was a special. It was the right moment if you ever were going to give it to Cole.
Yeah, I know what you mean. What you mean. But he did look good in it. He's not. I mean, the guy studies British comedy wrestling because he loves British comedy wrestling, and that's what he really wants to be. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, he felt like a legitimate contender.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it. He did a really nice job. And of course, Jay Lethal's awesome and everything. So I know what you mean. I don't. It's tough. Anytime you have a fuck finish on a main event of a pay per view, it's tough. And the other thing is, though, is it's a little easier. It's a main event. That's what kills it. But it is a little easier because they have clean finishers up and down the card usually. So it's not like WWE where, you know, you're going to have eight matches and five of them are going to have a finish, like a fuck finish. There's no other way to put it. That's what they are.
Yeah.
and that bothers me. I can have one, maybe two if it's inventive on a show. That's it. You know, but usually it's just one. But it is tough in the main event.
I agree. Joel, your thoughts?
Well, I look at it as I look at the whole angle, and I mean, it puts Adam Cole right at the top.
For sure.
Right at the point of being the guy that will obviously challenge Lethal for the title. Part of me gets why you don't put the strap on Cabana, because he is, again, that comedy character. We've seen a serious side from him. He has had serious matches in ROH before. It's not like he's just been a Santino Marella-like character his whole.
Although career. Santino had those moments that the Royal Rumble against Del Rio, I think people kind of bought into buying him, and the cage, the Elimination Chamber with Bryan, even Eric Young. So these guys can turn and have the fans behind them because they made them laugh, and now they root for them.
Yeah, and I think that Cabana, I get why you don't put the title on him. I think the Bullet Club I would say the Bullet Club on the indies have a year left in them. It feels like it's starting to really die down now, which is okay because they've had a fantastic run and it's put a lot of good guys on the map, and hopefully it propels guys even further. I look at this... super kick counter and the super kicking of everyone, and then doing like JR impressions on commentary. It's nice, and it's like, oh, that's kind of funny, but at the end of the day, you need to treat your world championship like a world championship. Is the Bullet Club going to pull this schnick, and will they continue to be? Is this their gimmick? Oh, 100%.
Well, the thing is, they historically have treated their world championship like a world championship. In many ways, I see that belt being a lot more valuable than most of the belts in any other company. I mean, it's definitely more valuable to me than the IC belt or the US belt. You know, it's right up there, right? Like, mm-hmm. They have historically treated it really, really well. Like I say, you cannot have, if you want to have an angle mean something, you cannot have it feel like a joke at the end. And it was a little too wink-wink.
Yeah.
And that's the shame.
And I mean, the Bullet Club's done it before. Like, I mean, Kenny Omega sending the guys to the back of the room saying the Smarks will take stars off of it. It's little things like that that when you hear it at first, it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of funny, ha ha ha. And then it sits with you more and more, and you're kind of like, oh, well, that was.
But cheap. Somehow, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about you did that an invasion attack.
Yeah.
In New Japan. But you have to keep in mind that then the Young Bucks came out and they interfered all over the match, which got him heel heat after doing that. And then you still, though, had a legit finish to the match.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. Like this whole thing is designed to strengthen the Bullet Club, to strengthen it for ROH, to strengthen it for Japan, because they have that partnership. That's the whole goal point of this thing. The whole point of this thing is to strengthen them, but it doesn't strengthen them to the point where it needs to, because it's, again, too wink-wink. And that it's not a bad, like, I agree with you. I feel like it is, there is that feeling like, okay, you know what? Now you're just keeping it going. I mean, but losing Gallows, Anderson, and Styles, you found new guys, but it needs to be their own thing. Keeping somebody else's thing going, and it again comes back to the NWO, you know, keeping somebody else's thing going, it doesn't feel as good. And it's too bad, because Kenny Omega, as the leader of the Elite, would probably be great. Yeah. And Adam Cole is his second in command, or fighting for his command, you know, or something like that, storyline wise. That would be great. But this whole, I agree with you. I think I'm sensing the momentum. It's designed to give them more momentum, and somehow I'm sensing it's not.
Yeah. In some ways, it might give them, like, I think Adam Cole, just from what I've seen and researched, because of how highly you've talked of him, I think this will propel Adam Cole forward, and I think Adam Cole will kind of bring them, and the Bucks are great entertainers regardless. I think that, well, there will still be some strengths. I do think this is heading to the 1999-2000 NWO phase of the Bullet Club.
Oh, Adam Cole will be fine no matter what. Because Adam Cole's, and it's going to get him in Japan where he's going to do really, really well. Though one of the things about Adam Cole is that he's so well-rounded. That's the thing about him that's very impressive. So things like his great promos, because he's very, very, very good on promos, just like he's a very, very, very good wrestler. I don't know if he's the greatest at anything, but as a whole package, he's so good.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, exactly. That's really what's impressive about him. But he's going to go to Japan, and those promos aren't going to mean as much, you know? And that's one thing that it will hurt him a little bit over there, I believe.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I do look at... It will be very interesting to see how this plays out. Because this, as much as this was treated as a joke, I am intrigued to see where this all lays out. Where does Lethal go? Where does Cabana go? Well,
we got Lethal. Lethal just defeated Donovan Dijak at the last tapings. And that wraps up that feud that they had set, where it looked like Lethal was still going to be the heel in the match. Apparently, he worked babyface and everything. And it leads into, Jay Lethal versus Jay Briscoe, which is interesting.
Yeah.
That they're going that direction first. And then you got Adam Cole. To give a little history on Adam Cole, Adam Cole won the belt. They had an injury to Jay Briscoe a few years ago. I believe this was 2013 even. And they had a tournament, and Adam Cole entered it as a babyface. He had just come off of breaking up Future Shock with Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly, also great. They were a great team. They had a really nice, hot feud, very bloody battle that they had, the hardcore type battle that really got them respect. And what happened was he was the babyface coming out of the feud. O'Reilly was the heel, and he got all the momentum out of it. People started to really respect him. Kind of like what happened when Mick Foley faced Randy Orton, where it's like, okay, people respected him more after this hardcore match. They had a hardcore type match that did that. It was really bloody. And he went into this tournament. He had all the momentum. He went right to the finals. People were like, I think it's his time. I think it's his time. And he wins it clean and then turns heel afterwards after he beats Elgin for the title. And then he's the heel champion. And all of a sudden he's coming in suits. And he's cutting all these great promos. And business for ROH went up a lot more than any other champion in recent memory, including Jay Lethal has done right now. It went up. But the storyline was that they were building was always that Elgin was the guy who couldn't quite get over that hump, much like Sami Zayn was having in NXT, where he couldn't just win the big one. And the storyline was always where he was going to win it. And so they took the belt off Adam Cole despite all this momentum, kind of like when they took the belt off Edge when he first got it.
Yeah.
To get it back on John Cena. They took it off of him, and he's never had it back. And the company has continued to grow, but not at the level it was when Adam Cole was the guy, which is where I first thought, oh, he is the guy. And that's why this is interesting, because it's been a long time, and so much has gone down. Can you recapture that momentum? Maybe. I think it's good enough. But that's why I want to see, you know. But that's really the history, is they took it off of him because they had a storyline, and they followed through with it. Even though everybody pretty much agreed at the time, it's the wrong move to take it off of him, because the momentum under him for this company is terrific.
I it's going to be very interesting, because you bring up a lot of points that I'm not privy to, and it's very interesting. I do wonder, especially now with the Jay Briscoe challenging, are they going to go with Adam Cole, or Are they just kind of holding off a little bit until summertime to have that angle
hit
off?
I think they're holding off. I think they're holding off for their final pay-per-view of the year, final battle in 2016 in December. I think that's probably the plan.
Yeah.
But that seems like a long to hold it off.
It definitely does. But, I mean, if you book it smart and you do it right, then, I mean... And Lethal's been champion for almost a year now. Is he getting close to that point?
Yeah, I think he's been a champion. I believe he's been champion about a year now, yeah.
So you're going to have this champion that hasn't been dethroned. Styles couldn't beat him. Cabana couldn't beat him. The list could go on. And I think, you know, if you save it for Cole to get it, then that's a huge rub for Cole. And that adds a little bit to the Bullet Club. But at the same time, will the Bullet Club still be around when that angle is supposed to pay off? I think so. But at the same time, the feeling is... How hot can the Bullet Club stay at, especially with losing their founding members like an Anderson, like a Prince Devitt? Like, those two were the big guys that were behind this, and now you've removed them from the equation, and you've got new guys kind of trying to fill that role. Like, I love Kenny Omega. I think he's a great talent, and I love the Bucks. I think they're great. But maybe it's time to be more the Elite than the Bullet Club.
Yeah, it feels like they're pretending to be the Bullet Club, not like they are the Bullet Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
Josh, any thoughts?
Yeah, Ring of Honor, catch the fever. I understood everything you were saying there. I just am not involved in the product enough to give our listeners a super educated view.
Well, I'll say this also about the pay-per-view. It's wrestling match after wrestling match after wrestling match, and you know what? I look at WWE's ROH is my favorite weekly TV show. It's 1 hour long. They're averaging in 2016 23 minutes worth of wrestling for an hour show. NXT is averaging 18 minutes per hour for a wrestling show on their weekly show. TNA is averaging 14 or 15 minutes on their two-hour show per hour. And WWE is averaging 14 minutes for SmackDown and 14 minutes for Raw. And so you're averaging 45 minutes on a total of 45 minutes of wrestling on a three-hour show. And that's part of the reason why Raw sucks to me. It's not enough wrestling. And ROH, 23 minutes in an hour, that's perfect. But this pay-per-view is match after match after match, and I'm like, I need something to break this up. I need a promo. I need some entertainment. I need some, like, it was too much. So, I mean, the balance wasn't quite there for me either.
I think you have to have that balance.
I had heard that a lot of people I've heard say, like, this pay-per-view is kind of blood of them because the really only thing they could really see on it was the main event, was the only really thing that really was a major draw. I mean, you had the Machine Guns on here, and, you know, I had the Bucks and other teams and participants in other matches, but really a lot of buzz I've heard about the show was it really didn't need to be a pay-per-view.
I think it was just the idea of the New Japan guys interacting.
Right. Tanahashi fought in here, did he not?
Tanahashi, yeah, and Moose against Okada, or no, Tanahashi and Elgin versus Moose and Okada, and that was kind of cool.
Nice.
Ishii versus Bobby Fish, that was pretty cool. And then,
yeah, I heard that was very good.
Yeah, and then Naito, I mean, I think a lot of people wanted to see him, you know, new the crowned, you know, IWGP champion. So, I mean, those are the things, and he's awesome. Like, he's freaking great. But, yeah, those were the things I think that were the main draw beside the main event.
I got a question for you, Mo. What do you think of the hanging,
Adam Page?
Yeah,
I like the name. You know what? It's they have too many Adams in ROH.
Just say, what isn't Elgin an Adam too?
Michael.
Yeah, like
they do have they had
Michael Bennett and one. Michael Elgin. I got them confused for a while.
Yeah, Michael Bennett and Michael Elgin. Yeah, no, they do have a third Adam as well. I can't remember his name right now, but it's Adam Page, Adam Cole, and then there was
Adam
another
Delirious.
Guy. It could be.
Maybe that's Delirious' first name. I don't know.
Oh, his first name is, believe it or not, Hunter.
I know.
That's the shoot.
Yeah.
the greatest thing to me in the world. ROH is real Booker. His name, his actual legit name is Hunter. Hunter Johnson. Which is funny because Triple H has a little Johnson. At least he books himself.
Well, he just got a new 3-year deal.
What was that? What was I saying? What was your question?
What do you think of them hanging? Which one of the? I'm trying to remember which one they hanged.
Yeah, they did. They did that angle. It's a wrestling angle we've had for a long, long time. We haven't seen in many, many years. Like, it, I mean, you've seen it though. Have you seen? I mean, Undertaker's hung people. Shawn Michaels is hung by Kevin Nash. I mean, it's happened over the years. It's just a wrestling angle. I don't have an issue with it, really.
Yeah, to be honest. I just wanted to see what you thought, because I saw that, and that it definitely is something that kind of grabs your attention. You're like, oh, geez, they did this. Oh, I didn't expect that, but it seems like they're trying to add some ROH. They're trying to, it seems like the Bullet Club is becoming a mainstay in ROH, more so than before.
I think we can all agree right now, too, that Ring of Honor, you know, as far as competition for WWE, I don't really consider them competition, but... No. They're the second biggest major wrestling company in the world now.
Yes. Yeah.
Not absolutely. In the world, in North America.
Yeah, in North America. They're probably the third biggest in the world, you know? Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you'd have to put them ahead of Triple A. I would put them ahead of Triple A.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you'd have to say they're the third biggest in the world, you know? And but the gap is huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Between them and WWE. Yeah, they're not competition. They're an alternative. But like we said, you know, recently on the show, last time I was on it, I think, is you're in a day and age where there's tons of alternatives to the WWE. So, I mean, and you don't have to go out of your way to find it. You can find it. It's there, you know, because we live in a digital age. And that's good. I mean, and people are. People are definitely trying different things.
Well, now that you mention it, let's talk about WWE. The club... And Roman Reigns in the main event, not the main event, because Big Cass versus Jericho were the main event that came over a potted plant, which is bizarre. But that six-man was terrific, and this AJ and Roman feud has been terrific. I think everything about this feud has been perfect, and really, AJ has exceeded any expectations I had of him in the company.
Joel, I'm going to let you go.
I've liked it. I've liked what they've done. I think that they have been smart. They booked both of them. AJ's been more of a babyface. Roman's been a little bit more in between. Roman's a badass that can beat people up. AJ's fantastic and can beat people up. It's believable that both these guys could capture, or one could retain the title and one could win it. It's very fun, because you definitely have the smarks are definitely behind AJ Styles. Some of the casual fans are going to be behind Roman, but you're definitely seeing this battle between the club, which is so cool to see. When you see Gallows and Anderson and AJ walking down the ramp together, and then you see the Usos and Roman fighting. It's a lot of fun. I think this has been one of the best feuds they've done in WWE for a while for the main title. And I think that there's a lot of positives going right now. I'm very intrigued to see what happens at Extreme Rules. I think we get the Demon. I really am leaning towards that, but I don't want to get my hopes up. I think ultimately Roman does retain and win, but I think AJ Styles has just cemented himself as a main eventer in this feud.
That's a key point. I'm going to come back to you for a second here, Josh, just because I know that you weren't too high on Raw, and you said you weren't in a good mood when you watched it. And you gave it a shot. Did you go back and rewatch it? And that's why you
kind of feel watched a little bit of the Hulu edition of it. But still, overall, it was kind of a blah show to me. There was some, you know, some highs and lows, but it was nothing really like stood out to me. Like that Roman stuff did. That really stood out to me. Also, I just find this whole thing over a potted plant so ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, all right. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Reigns and Styles.
Thank God you're not talking about the potted plant. I'm not going to call it by its human given name. It's a potted plant.
This podcast has gotten called Mitch.
Shut up.
That's a great idea.
Life of Mitch is what this podcast is going to be called.
Life of Mitch. See, the thing about the Styles and Reigns thing is, I don't think the booking has been that good if you actually look at it. I think it's the dynamic of those two that is good. I think they're overcoming the booking. I think it's that Styles is so damn good. He's so damn good.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And he is standing out, not just from his wrestling ability, but his actual charisma is really what's impressive.
He has to be impressing even Vince, hey, Mo?
Oh, I think so. Like, because to me, this feels like the hottest feud since Cena and Punk. Like,
yeah.
Like that crowd, the way they were reacting to it, like the week before, I was convinced that was a heel turn for Reigns. And then the next night, you came out on SmackDown, and after or Styles was put through this table, and he's fine, and he's wrestling, and then the family wins, and it's even Steven. Then you get to Raw, and they don't reference SmackDown once at all. And
I'm we shocked, though?
This is shitty booking. I'm like, these guys suck. And then that match happened. You realize that match, it was an elimination match? Do you guys realize that match was only 8 minutes long?
Yeah. I was actually surprised, because when I initially watched it, well, most of the way I watch it is I'll be watching the game that I have to watch that night or whatever, and I normally watch Raw around 9 o'clock and just PVR through it really quickly.
Yep.
If a match really catches my attention, then I'll watch it, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll get one of the Usos out, and I'll wait down to the AJ thing. And before I knew it, I'm like, okay, I must have fast-forwarded through a lot of this match. And like you were saying, like, I was actually shocked how short this was, because I was like, this will be a good match. It'll be a nice 20 minutes, 15-minute TV match. And, yeah, I was really shocked by how short it all was.
8 minutes long, and yet it was so effective. It was 5 minutes less than the New Day versus the Dudley. Like, yeah. It's unbelievable. The action and the crowd reaction. This feud has been – it's really weird, because now AJ was kind of booked heelish. And I can't tell if they're trying to tweener both of them for a split crowd, or if they've decided, oh no, we don't want to turn Reigns after all, and which would be the mistake. But and we want AJ to be the heel. And I can't tell, and who knows? They might not even know, because let's face it, they usually don't. But it's the dynamic. There's something about these two where sometimes you just get that perfect dynamic between performers. That it's not the booking, it's the guys. And it's just, even no matter if they didn't even book anything, they would be just something about them standing next to each other and looking at each other like that, and that belt's on the line, and they just, you get excited for it. And there's
which Roman needed. Roman needed that. No one's talking about how shitty Roman's promos are, or he doesn't deserve to be in this spot. People are just focusing on the feud for the most part.
For the last 18 months, here's what you've gotten with Roman Reigns. This is why this is so good for him. Because the last 18 months, when they've been trying to build him up for the championship or longer, however long it's been, it feels like it feels like 15 years. For however long they've been doing this, Roman Reigns enters the ring to a series of boos, and then if he talks at all, he gets a little bit of boos, and then the match starts, and he gets a little bit of boos when he's throwing his punches, and then largely silence. Silence. He gets booed mainly during his entrance, and his matches get apathy. And this is not what you're getting here. He's still getting booed during the entrance, but during the matches, it's finally the reaction John Cena got, where the chanting and the whatever is constant throughout it. This has gotten to that next level.
Yeah, I got to agree with you.
That's important about this. That's what makes this interesting to me. And it's not their booking. Their booking's been shit on it. Really. Honestly, it has. It's AJ Styles' performance and the fact that Roman Reigns is elevated by Styles, and finally you're seeing some of his skills come out because of that, because he does have skills.
That's a perfect way to say this, his skills, because, you know, when you came on the first time, I really shitted on Roman Reigns. And I've always said he's a talented guy. He can have good matches. I think, in a way, I don't think he'd ever admit this right now. I think down the road, I think he started lacking a little bit of confidence in himself, because everybody was against him, and he must hear it in the back. The whispers and the snickering of, you're not the guy, you're Lex Luthor, you're Sid Vicious, you're this guy. And I can just start seeing, like, you can see the confidence in him during this feud now. It's something I saw in the Shield days with him.
Yes, I agree with you totally. I think he definitely looks more confident. And because he was allowed to go heelish and put him through that table and get that side out from him, that's mm-hmm. helped too, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not like this laid back guy.
No, he's a hellraiser. He's a beat your ass guy.
But you'll remember, it's a key moment when AJ Styles said, "I'm not going to hesitate to take him out." When that elimination happened to Gallows, I believe, and then it was one-on-one, AJ immediately jumped him, double-legged him, got on top of him, and ground and pounded him. Mm-hmm. And it felt intense. It felt real. It felt important. And it was AJ. AJ did that, but it helped Reigns.
I wonder who the agent on this was, too, because that could be something, like, the only agent I would really trust on this would be Malenko or Jamie Noble for a spot. If I don't know if AJ did in the fly, like you're saying. If it was an agent, only two agents I could think of coming up with something like that would be a Noble or a Demon.
I don't know, but it's not what they usually do. Usually in that situation, they would kind of circle each other and mm-hmm. eye each other.
Mm-hmm. Grapple.
But because he just immediately went after him and brought him down and started hitting him, it's like it felt like something more. Yep. It felt like, oh, you know, like the shit is on. That's what it felt like, you know, and then because it led to them being outside the ring, and that's when they had to stare down after this. It felt like here's two guys who both believe they can beat each other, and neither one's going to back them down. And they have one guy's quick and agile and experienced, another guy's powerful and has the legacy and size. And it's like, but neither and both of them are just not backing down. They both believe in all their hearts that they can beat each other. And that's their performance when they're staring at each other and all that shit. Again, that's not it's not the booking. It's mm-hmm. these two. These two have something.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I always knew AJ had this, but I have been so impressed with Roman Reigns. And in a way, you know, you go online and you see the smarks and whatever. And the people that still hate on Roman Reigns and say he's not over and stuff, I don't think they're paying enough attention, because this is exactly whatever deluded vision Vince had of Roman Reigns. This is it. This is what he wanted.
This is largely it. And you know what? Again, I'm more impressed with Styles, because Styles is the one
who's getting this out of Roman.
But Styles with Jericho didn't have the same dynamic.
Well,
but it wasn't at this level. And it's not like Reigns has something with the right guy.
I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole, but there had been a report about Jericho about drinking, you know, into the later days, and that a lot of people in the locker room had been concerned about him and saying it was affecting his matches. Do you think that's really, because I don't know if we talked with you about this, Mo, but when he had those matches with Jericho, they just never really seemed to hit. And I was like, how are these not hitting? Because it's Chris Jericho, and AJ Styles just doesn't have bad matches. And now do we look back at that and be like, maybe that's why? Because what AJ's done with everybody else has been terrific.
It's weird, because they still have the match of the year on TV, but it was the tag match against the New Day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they had good matches, but they were matches that were going through the motions. Now, I hadn't heard that about Jericho.
Yeah, it just broke this week that a lot of the people in the locker room don't want to work with him. This Ambrose feud may be it after Extreme Rules. I haven't heard much about it, but yeah, he's been partying in the late nights, and a lot of the people in the locker room are really uncomfortable with how he's partying and everything, and that some have even said, like, I don't want to work with him because he's been very sloppy in the ring, and people are blaming that on him partying too hard.
I just thought it was age, honestly.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's Joel, you know, I know you've had some thoughts on this as well.
There's so many with Chris Jericho. He lives that rocker lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Rock and roll lifestyle. And part of me wants to think, probably where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't know if it's as bad as what it's being let out, mm-hmm. but at the same time, we're seeing this, that it's not the same Jericho we're used to. Now, I do think age does play a factor into this, and he did have that back that was really messed up, and thanks to DDP yoga that seemed to help him. I wonder how much that also plays a factor into it. I think there's a lot of angles for this Jericho. I still think Jericho's one of my favorite performers, but
on the mic he's just killing it still.
there's just a certain point where, I mean, he's made a potted plant named Mitch and a light-up jacket relevant. Like, people will talk about that. And that's because of Chris Jericho. So maybe physically he's not there, and maybe this drinking thing is an issue, and maybe there is a point where you got to be like, hey, clean up your act a little bit. But I think Jericho's smart enough to know that.
Yeah,
so.
I would agree. And we never got your thoughts on the whole AJ Roman thing as well.
I started off. I liked it. I'm happy. Good cool. job.
Mo, any more?
That was quick.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know what? I think you guys might be underestimating this jacket angle a little bit. I didn't like the Mitch potted plant thing. I thought that was awful. But like I say, I thought the week before, until the end with AJ and Reigns putting him through the table, I thought that show was like the worst Raw.
Don't get me wrong. That Raw wasn't very good either.
I thought that was just horrible. So, I mean, that really saved it for me. But I think this whole thing is, you guys could probably think back on something, like The Rock did, or like Austin coming through and drinking beer and spraying them. It's like they were doing things like that every week, you know,
for sure.
Spraying them with them. And that type of thing. And it's like one of those angles, like there's a lot of angles. There's angles I can think of by Mick Foley where he just did something and it was just entertaining in the moment. And it didn't seem like anything. But now I look back on it fondly, like it somehow stands out. I can think of things even John Cena did like that, and I can definitely think of a few from The Rock and a lot from
JBL
Austin.
Is poopy.
Well, okay, not that one. I hate that. oh, you're gonna get me. Oh, damn it, crime time. But that's the thing is that I think that for people who are like 10 and 12 years old, this is one of those angles that they're just gonna remember. Like
for
I
sure,
really
I
think,
agree.
I think they've been watching this product since they were like, say they're 12 years old and they've been watching it since they were 9. They've never known Chris Jericho to not have that jacket.
Yeah,
I think they're going to remember it. I think it's one that I think it's actually something they're going to talk about 10, 20 years from now. Like, remember that great moment?
Well, I will agree that the sharing of the inanimate objects has brought something extra to this feud that didn't really have too much to it. At first, it was about talk shows. And now it's about jacket and potted plants.
And now, apparently, on SmackDown, Jericho puts him in a straitjacket, leading to likely some sort of straitjacket match at Extreme Rules.
Okay, cool.
Well, I don't know how that would be. I mean, I imagine if you managed to put your opponent in the straitjacket, you would win or something like that.
Much different. Like the ambulance match or buried alive match kind of thing.
Something like that. It's different at least, right?
Yeah. I like to see what they could do because I just want to see Jericho gel in the ring. Everything else he's done has been like peak Jericho. The way he comes out, that stupid scarf, like Jericho. You know, I have you seen the Dudley's DVD yet, Mo?
I haven't. No, is it good?
It's terrific. And I thought Bubba said something really good in it when they were in ECW. No one would buy their merch, and he said, "Cool heels aren't cool." Because you want people to hate you so that they won't buy their merchandise. And people hated them so much in ECW that they wouldn't even buy their shirts. And Jericho's at a point right now, even though we all love him, I kind of hate him a little bit when he comes out with that smirk and that stupid scarf. I want to hate him, and I want to root for whoever he's going against. And he's playing that heel role perfectly.
On his own podcast, I can't remember who it was. I think he might be talking to Enzo and Big Cass. When he said guys in scarves just have heel heat. It's like JBL said this. It's like JBL was at a gym, and the guy beside him, the guy came out to the gym with him from the locker room with this towel around his neck. And when he was done, he put the towel around his neck and he walked back. And JBL thought to himself, that guy's a heel because he has a towel for no reason.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna use that because it's just when you have a towel for no reason or you have a scarf it's a heel. It's like you just want to punch a guy like that, you know. If you saw a guy in a scarf like that down the street, you just think he's a pretentious prick. Mm-hmm. And but it's like Jericho, like a little thing where he said where he's like, I gave him whiplash and I gave him. I'm like, he threw all these things that were just ridiculous in there, and yet that entertained me because it's just it's so. Just douchey, You know, he can be douchey like nobody else.
Oh,
except
yeah.
Except for maybe The Miz.
Yeah, well, anything you want to hit on, either one of you with the IC spot right now, are you excited about the... I think the four-way match will be fun.
Yeah.
Anything with... do you think they're just kind of drawing out the KO and Sammy one-on-one feud as far as they're going? Because I'm assuming they're going to be in this Fatal 4-Way, and I assume both of them will be in Money in the Bank as well.
I think they're going to come back to it at some point. I thought the IC title match was really good. Or IC match, I guess it was not title match, but the IC match the match between The Miz and Miz was good too. Like Miz
had a good year.
Like he really has. I think people, because he sucked for so much and was so annoying, people don't realize how much he's improved, and it's too late now. If this guy had gotten the push that he got when he was a world champion, I think it would have worked.
Most improved player so far, Mo, this year.
Well, the thing that really always hurt him was he was a good talker. But then he started wrestling, and his offense was the shits. It was his offense that really hurt. The thing that he's added is a mean streak to his offense.
Yeah.
He has a heel mean streak. Just a whiny heel mean streak. And even when he put on that figure four, he wrapped Zayn's leg behind his own back and then held it with his arm. And it was like, that was really cool. Like, that was like those type of little subtle things that make it work. But I want to come back to Zayn. How familiar are you guys with Sami Zayn's history?
I'm decently familiar. Back to the, I think he was that El Generico guy, or it's his cousin. They have a similar stance. I don't know.
How about you? How about you, Joel? How much do you know about his story here?
I feel I'm all right with.
I want to give a little history lesson on him, because I'm telling you, this match on Raw was huge towards him getting over. And this match, to me, he was great, and it signified exactly why this guy's going to be a big star. So I'm gonna give a little history lesson for you, less for you guys, I guess, more for the listeners if they're not familiar with them. But this is a guy who loved wrestling, wanted to become a wrestler, and he showed up and he didn't have a gimmick and he didn't know what his gimmick was gonna be. This El Generico mask was put on.
Whoa, 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 whoa. He's not El Generico.
All right, okay. This El Generico mask was put on a guy named Sami Zayn that wasn't him.
Okay.
But it was put on him because he was planning to do this until he came up with a gimmick. He was planning to do this until he figured out his gimmick. And until he figured out what it was going to be. And so it was just meant to be temporary. So it's just while he was practicing, basically. And then he started getting kind of popular. And then he started getting booked. And it just built upon itself. And then he's an ROH. And he's a comedy character. But he's getting these great crowd reactions that start to get him to book him to win a couple matches. And then he's getting booked elsewhere. And all of a sudden he finds himself unable to get this mask on that he never really wanted to wear in the first place. But wearing this mask, what it forced him to do was learn to sell with other parts of his body. What he does better than any wrestler in wrestling today, and better than any wrestler I've seen since Shawn Michaels, and maybe even better than him, and certainly there was some of this with Daniel Bryan because he was a small guy, but it's the kickout, the drama of the kickout.
Yeah.
He has the most dramatic kickouts. He kicks out with
better
his
than
whole
Kurt's?
Body. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he kicks out with his whole body. It seems like it's last second, and he kicks out his whole body, and it seems like it's the greatest effort just to do it. And then he sits back, and he's like, he's still exhausted, and you're like, he's screwed next time he has to kick out. And then he does it again, and the drama builds on himself. It's so good, and it's because he wore that mask for all these years that he learned how to sell with his body, and he had to learn how to do things like the drama kick out and just little things like selling things that he's so good now that his mask is off, and his facial expressions now match that because he was probably doing them underneath the mask the whole time anyways, that he's better at these little subtle psychological babyface underdog things. And it's the reason that mask was a blessing, because he learned how to do things that other wrestlers in WWE don't know how to do because they never had to do it, because they never had to overcome this obstacle, you know, like this mask was.
I agree.
So that's
there's a little history lesson. That's why he's awesome, and that's why he's going to be a big star.
I completely agree with everything you're saying. I think everyone in that I don't, who do you think walks away with the belts from that match?
Oh boy.
Do you keep it on The Miz for a while, just because I think all of us are so old school and we like to build up a champion, and I think there is something to that douchebag Hollywood Miz character that kind of, he's that swarmy guy that just, he keeps on getting out of it all the time.
I look at it from, like, are you asking me what they're going to do or what I would do?
Let's go with both.
Those are different. Well, I think they're probably going to keep, I don't know what they're going to do, actually. I know, here's what I would do, okay? I would put it on Cesaro, because I think he's the guy who would be the most damaged if he doesn't get it.
Okay.
Because he came back, and now instead of having a one-on-one feud where he gets highlighted, he's in there. Yeah, they're good workers, and they're over and stuff, but he's kind of, I feel like he's getting lost in the mix to some degree. So if he doesn't get it after coming back and all this stuff and having his new entrance and everything, I think he would be damaged. So I think you need to put the belt on him and then break him off into, not with the Miz, with some, because they feuded for the U.S. belt like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But
break him off into somebody else and let them have good matches. I think that would be the best.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Zayn and Owens doesn't need the belt.
No. I think one of them is going to have Money in the Bank, to be honest. I've predicted Sami Zayn since January is winning Money in the Bank, and I'm sticking to that.
That is a good prediction. Very good.
He just kind of seems like that Daniel Bryan. I could also see KO winning the Money in the Bank as well. KO makes a lot of sense as well. Or could it be a returning Seth Rollins? Because Vince McMahon recently said that all those injured superstars, pretty much mentioned every injured superstar, Bray Wyatt, John Cena, and Seth Rollins will be back in the next 4 weeks.
I'm going to want to get Joel's opinion on this, but here's what I hear when I hear that. 4 top baby faces are coming back.
Yeah, and we still have no heels.
Yeah, that's the problem. And it's a problem for them, for AJ. And that's maybe why they turned AJ this last week. I can't tell if they did. It's definitely going to be a problem for Reigns, no matter what. And it's just a problem with the roster. All 4, that's 4 guys. I can't see Rollins not being a babyface coming back.
Maybe they just turn back the babyface. Maybe turn back the Wyatts and just like, hey, forget that we tried to turn them faces.
Maybe.
But that's still not enough.
No, it's no. Because he's stale as a heel. So that was a good thing for him.
Maybe you get Randy as a heel when he comes in, or does this really matter what Randy is?
I don't know. Yeah.
Because Seth has to be a babyface. Or maybe Seth's a heel for at least a month. Because he's got to maybe turn it.
That first month will be easiest to be a babyface and then turn the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's a big thing. Either way, I'm like... as great as he's been, I fear for AJ Styles with all this.
So who's the number one heel in the company right now? The Anderson and Gallows?
It's got to be Kevin Owens is actually, I think, the number one heel in the
company. Yeah, okay, then there's that, but he's not really in the main event scene, though.
I know. That's kind of the weird thing.
Yeah. But, I mean, we're happy. Well, how do you think you can place all these guys into this? Where do you see Seth
part
going?
Part of the thing is, I've been saying this for a while. I look at the UFC, and I've seen big matches. Like, I saw, you know, Chuck Liddell versus, you know, Randy Couture to do a million buys, and both were baby faces, and the crowd was just, it was split, and they're just cheering different people. I don't know that you need straight heels and baby faces. I think you just need guys
that shades of gray that we always hear so much about.
Not even shades of gray. Just be over. The crowd will choose.
Right.
Just be over. But there is some shades of gray, I guess, in the AJ, and that's part of what's making it work is AJ and Reigns is it doesn't feel like a straight heel and baby face. It feels like two guys who are just fighting for what they want and believe in or to some degree.
I mean,
maybe that's the direction.
So we already have a date for Cena. Where do you see, I think Randy's really the odd man out in here, because all indications are that Bray and Brock are finally gonna have their feud at SummerSlam when Brock returns in August. So where does, and I don't know where Cena, are we assuming that Seth's going to either face Hunter or Roman, I'm assuming?
Who's your ideal opponent for Seth?
I would say, do you think they're just going to do, first of all, Mo, and I'll ask you this to you, Joel, do we think Roman will have the title until WrestleMania?
Yes.
So is it a slow build from Seth winning the Rumble and finally getting Roman and winning it at WrestleMania?
The question to me is when does Shane take on Hunter? Is it SummerSlam or is it Mania?
That's the question, too, because if not, is it Seth faces him there? Because at one point, Seth's got to face Hunter as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who do you have face? Who does Roman face at SummerSlam? Is it Cena?
It should be Brock, actually. Cena would be good. It should be Brock.
Because I can't see what Cena would face at SummerSlam unless that's where, you know, we've heard the Taker rumors, but they just do the Taker match there, then Taker's officially done.
Yeah, to me, the idea of Taker not having his last match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on that, Mo.
Who's your ideal opponent, though, for Orton? Orton and AJ would mesh really well.
I love it. Me and Joel have been talking about this for a while. Hey, Joel, we couldn't really figure it out for Randy, but AJ is not terrible.
I think AJ is destined for Finn. I think they're going to be, because then you branch them off. You introduce Finn, give AJ a feud. I still don't know where Randy goes.
Do you bring Joe in for Randy?
No, that's not.
Or Joe in for Cena?
I think you have to look at the next takeover event. Is it June 8th?
Yeah.
So June 8th, Finn loses to Joe and then moves up. And right. I think that happened. And then I think you have that whole Balor Club. When I hear, I hope they go with Balor Club, because when I hear the club, I just think of that thing you used to put on your steering wheel for your car. Keep it from being stolen.
Going to the club, man, like 50 Cent.
Oh. Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe you're going to Sam's Club, you know, the American version of Costco.
Really?
Well, some of them are called Sam's Clubs. They're kind of like big Costco's out there. The more you know, Mo. The more you know. The
more you know.
I don't know where Randy goes, but I really have missed Randy Orton quite a bit. But I've heard maybe his shoulders was bugging him more than was let on. But apparently, if Vince is saying it, if Vince is telling stockholders that these guys are going, they better be there in 4 weeks, because these are four big guys that you promised, especially three of them. We know Cena's coming back, but Randy and Seth were news to all of us. They would be back in 4 weeks.
Certainly, if you look at the idea of if you elevate Cesaro and Zayn and Owens and bring up Shinsuke Nakamura and you bring up Finn and then bring in those and Joe, hopefully. Though I'm not sure. I think he may be there for a while now, but we'll see. But you bring up you look at those people and then AJ. You know, and then the idea of bringing these four people in, it feels like a bunch of fresh matches. Mm-hmm. Knowing them, they'll blow through it in 3 weeks on Raw.
Yeah, we're going to have John Cena versus AJ, then we're going to have Randy versus AJ, then we're going to have Finn versus Cena, and Finn versus Randy, and Nakamura versus Cena on free TV.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
I mean, with that Cena and that AJ match is the biggest dream match that you have. They can't say it, but that's WWE versus TNA, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
And that's a match that you do not have them face each other till a pay-per-view or network special, whatever the hell it's called.
It's weird, though. You know, one thing I can say about AJ, to me, he already doesn't feel like a TNA guy. He already doesn't even...
He feels a little bit
like a New Japan guy, but already, to me, mainly, he feels like a WWE guy.
Fair. I think my point is, and I think you can agree with
me. But I know what you're saying.
The face of what TNA was. He was the face. Him or Joe were. Probably AJ, though. Jeff Jarrett, arguably, as well. But I think the figurehead for a while was AJ Styles. He was the heart and soul of TNA. AJ left, it really was when it started to crumble, really, too.
Shit, yeah. Absolutely. And you know what? And who knows? Maybe by that time, WWE will own their library.
Well, I mean, in that Dudley's DVD, they talked quite a bit about them. Bubba even mentioned that he was a former world champion. So things are kind of getting a little less icy between for what they will talk about them on their broadcast. Which is still silly they don't really mention them, because they're not even next. They're zero threat to them.
They're zero threat at this point, yeah. Zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Joel, anything that's come across your brain while we've been talking? You've been left out for the last 20 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing that comes to mind is the roster is going to be crowded. There's certain guys that will definitely rise up to the top or be positioned for the top regardless. I think this puts a little bit more pressure on certain guys to really deliver. I think we see some good matches, and I think we see some guys that we might not be talking about or even realize kind of shine through. Because we have all these names, but there's no guarantees that they're going to be... We're going to see them and be like, oh, cool, Randy Orton's back. Or cool, Cena... Well, not Cena, but cool, Bray's back.
I think we'll still say cool, Cena's back, because it's been more than half a year without John Cena.
I'm retracting Cena. I think Cena's back.
Okay, yeah, okay.
But I think Orton and Bray kind of fall into that gray area where it'll be, they're back, but are they going to click? Where do they belong? Because... You know, you talk about AJ being a little nervous about AJ. I'm not as worried, because I think AJ came at the right time, because he's been able to establish himself and prove that he is a big-time player in the WWE. And I think that will carry forward. I think the biggest thing, there's going to be a lot of spots, and there's a lot of bodies. I don't know that some of these names that we think about may be big players. Like, I don't know if Sammy or KO win the Money in the Bank. I could see Ambrose winning it this year, just because they kind of want to carry on with that Shield thing, and they like.
But do they want to do anything with Ambrose though? Because I don't really know. I mean, WrestleMania really seemed like Ambrose's chance, and I just keep on hearing they like Ambrose as a piece, but not as the piece.
Even they just because he wins Money in the Bank doesn't mean he has to cash in successfully, but I could see them. I think they have they have certain guys that they're going to push. They already have in mind who they're going to push. Mm-hmm. I think Cena's going to get pushed. I think Seth is going to get pushed. I don't think Randy's going to get as big of a push. I think Randy's going to be kind of... Randy will always be there, and Randy will always be a good hand.
Coincidentally, Randy kind of seems like Randy Savage to me right now, when Randy Savage was finishing up, where it's like, it's a really good hand to have, but he's not going to... He's just a nice name to have that you can do stuff with here and there.
Yeah. Bray is definitely the one where I could see, especially with Luke Harper getting hurt, and just the Wyatt's the whole not clicking, mostly because of their booking. I think that we see a guy like Sammy or KO kind of slot in there, or Dean. It's going to be very crowded. It's going to be very complex, and not all the guys we want to be at the top are going to be at the top, because you are going to have a crowded group. But at the end of the day, there's only two names that are going to be at the top of that mountain, possibly three, and the names are John Cena, Roman Reigns, and possibly Seth Rollins. But
Maybe AJ. He's done enough, I think, that, like Mo was saying, he can constantly turn chicken shit into chicken salad, that he works his way to the top regardless, especially how much money he's getting.
I think
he is. The advantage is the crowd buys him at the same level as Reigns already.
He's at Daniel Ambrose, Bryan level, man.
They do not buy Ambrose at that level.
No.
As an example.
No, and that was my point.
Yeah, that is the advantage. That doesn't mean they won't push him down the card. But I mean, when you say all this, the X factor is still Brock Lesnar as well.
Yeah,
and that's a name that will be coming back. And if you're paying this guy $5-6 million a year to show up and only do a couple dates here and there, he better be in the main event. He better not be involved in these wasted time programs, because that's a waste of money. You're throwing money away. You're giving it to a guy that's like, okay, well, I'll just go throw the Wyatts around for a little bit. That's cool. You need to involve him in something that has a storyline and has when Brock shows up, because Brock's not going to be there every night. But when you can have it be like, oh, crap, Brock's here. This is furthering this. You need to do that with Brock.
You know what? I mean, that's an excellent point, because And I think this guy is an excellent point, Joel, because I don't think he's lost I don't think he's lost clean since WrestleMania 29. It's 3 years. Like he lost to The Undertaker, but that wasn't clean because he really didn't. The Undertaker really tapped first, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if you look at it, the last guy he lost clean to, shock, at WrestleMania was Triple H, WrestleMania 29. And since then, he has beaten Triple H in a Hell in a Cell, Undertaker a couple times, including WrestleMania, CM Punk, like John Cena. Like, he hasn't lost, really, in 3 years. So you think to yourself, oh, they're doing a good job with him. But if you don't have an opponent who people buy against him, then it doesn't matter that you're having him win and you never have him lose. He's still not going to draw for you what he needs to draw. And so that's where you're right. They have to involve him in something that interests you or then people can buy, you know, which is that's the challenge.
And it's hard now because you've given him that streak. You've given him he's destroyed people, and now it's hard to find someone. And I think there's only a handful of guys on the roster right now that I could buy beating him right now, and it's very small. And even then, you could talk me out of convincing me that those guys could beat Brock. You need to have someone like if they're going to go, and it sounds like they're going to go Bray and Brock, I don't buy Bray beating Brock. It's a simple
no, not at this point. And like I say, it's the wrong time because Bray seems to have legs as a babyface. It's the wrong time. The guy who is for SummerSlam, who to me would be the most intriguing if he's booked strong and kept as a legendary status and you play up his 15 world championships or whatever, not John Cena I'm talking about. I'm talking fresh match. Randy Orton is somebody people might buy because he's been so successful in there so long.
There's three matches for me with Brock. You hit on one of them and the other two guys are in NXT. The other one is the rematch against Nakamura. The first one they had with Nakamura and Brock wasn't very good. But that was because Nakamura was still very young and was still learning.
He hadn't found the personality he has now.
No.
His offense was still more MMA based. It was not the same.
No. But I think now if you had him and Nak, it'd just be a hard hitting great match. And the other one is the match that we want, the Lance Storm tweeted WWE about the other day. It's Samoa Joe.
Yeah, that's the biggest. Samoa Joe, you buy as a badass. You would buy that guy as being as badass as Brock. You know, he feels like he wouldn't back down.
Exactly.
Like, holy shit, it's on. And that same thing. But I do think you have to throw Roman Reigns some degree in there
for sure. And this is the rematch.
I do think there'd be interest in Kevin Owens versus Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, for sure. So those are some opponents that they're all better than Bray because I just don't think Bray should take another loss either.
God, no.
You need to build him up and build him up. I think he comes back and he just needs to run out.
We forgot Braun Strowman.
Right.
That's money.
Maybe Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton is a feud that we need to go with.
Haven't they done that? Maybe they haven't.
I don't think so. I don't believe they have. Joel?
That's strange. It feels like they have, but I can't think of it.
No, I don't think they have, because Bray feuded with Dean. Bray's feuded.
Cena.
No.
Brian.
Taker.
I can't think. Nothing comes to Roman. Nothing comes to mind with Randy and Bray.
No.
Maybe not.
So, and like, I think Randy's Teflon now. He can take wins or losses and it doesn't really matter.
Great.
So, if he loses to Bray, it's not a horrible thing. And it helps Bray push Bray forward, so.
I would agree.
Have we covered it all, guys?
No, we have some of the Diva stuff. Dana Brooke had a debut, and this just got me thinking of one last subject here is. Some of these NXT call-ups have been a little ridiculous because there's a lot of people that are just not ready. Dana Brooke was not ready at all, and Apollo Crews was not ready, but he wasn't even on Raw this week.
Oh, that's obvious that's a mistake. I mean, putting him on Superstars and main event already.
I think
he had
just...
little, he had that little tease with Jericho when they walked past each other, kind of eyeing each other.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's obvious. What a waste. This guy'd be so much better served than NXT.
He'd be better in NXT, and I think he's the next guy for the throne. I think you have him and Joe next would be the right feud to go with, unless Bobby Roode does get his contract, and that is the feud. I don't really think you put the belt on Nakamura, because you don't pay a guy as much as you're paying Nakamura to have him down in NXT for that long.
Here's the thing. I'm going back. Let's go old school here.
Sure.
NXT starts. The first champion is Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins, yeah.
Okay. Seth Rollins loses it to Big E.
Big E, yeah.
Okay. He loses it to Bo Dallas.
Yeah, the worst NXT champion.
He loses it to Neville. Okay. Even Bo Dallas, maybe he was the worst champion, but still not that bad. He had it for a long time.
In NXT, he was terrific.
The point being that this belt was put on guys who still needed to develop at some point, especially Bo Dallas and Big E. When you're putting it on Samoa Joe and Finn, now I'm talking Bobby Roode. You're not. You need to put it on a guy like Apollo Crews, who's not ready, who having that belt and defending it in the main event on NXT will help him get better and get him ready.
I totally agree.
That belt, as much as it means and as much as they're trying to be a hot touring brand and whatever, it's all in the booking. If the booking's good, it doesn't matter. If when you're putting the belt was meant a lot for for Big E's development. It meant a lot for him to be that champion. And it meant quite a bit for Bo as well. They blew it with Bo. Blew it with Bo.
But he got better because
he was champion.
Neville.
So yeah, Bobby Roode's not going to get better if he's the champion. So get it, even Neville, get it on a guy who's developing so he learns what it's like to have to carry a company and develops as a champion.
That's why I don't want to see the only way AHL hockey players get better is to play in the NHL. And it's the same thing with NXT. The only way these guys get better is to be put in a situation where they are half the spotlight, where they have to
where they're the man, where they have to carry the company.
And if they crack, then you know that that's not your guy. And it's pure and simple as that. It might be NXT, but if they can't carry NXT, then they sure couldn't carry the main roster.
So going from Samoa Joe from Finn Balor, who didn't need it, if maybe a little bit to establish him, but not really, to Joe, who doesn't need it at all and doesn't need to be established.
Kevin Owens didn't need it.
Nakamura or Roode, who doesn't need it. The idea of doing that to me is like, you're losing track of what you're supposed to be doing with this belt in this territory.
Yeah, I agree.
Of course you do. You guys are smart. You guys agree with me almost all the time. Like Abby talk wrestling, who never agrees with me.
I think you just bring up good points, and I think you can sometimes see when people aren't ready. I see Emma have her promo, and I'm like, oh, I'm actually kind of enjoying this feud between Emma and Becky, and then all of a sudden I see Dana Brooke, and I'm like, I liked what they were doing in NXT, and maybe
it's you know what, it's the same thing. Asuka doesn't need that belt.
No,
when Charlotte got that belt, it helped her development.
Same with Sasha,
it helped their development.
Bailey,
it helped her development.
But it's the stories too. Asuka. The stories, I think the story they told with Charlotte helped. The story they told with Sasha helped. The story they told with Bailey helped. There is stories around. Even Sammy didn't technically need it, but it was Sammy getting the big one. He never had gotten the big one, and that's the difference too.
For the crowd.
Yeah. I think with Dana Brooke, I think the only reason that they brought her up is she was down in NXT, and they're like, "Well, what do we do with her? She was so tied with Emma. Let's just Emma."
Look, that's the thing. As an act, like coming to the ring and like. Her promos still need work. She's a shitty promo. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
But like their act, their look as they come to the ring that's ready. Mm-hmm. But then when she wrestles or when she talks, she's not. So don't do it. She's brought up because Hunter likes her. Hunter likes the fitness model always has. She's a chick with fake blonde hair, huge fake breasts, who looks like she's on all sorts of
DSL lips.
All sorts of chemical enhancements in many, many ways, who looks like she also still going to manage someday somehow to get fat someday. I'm sorry. That sounds to me like Hunter's type. That to me seems like why she's up there.
Yeah. I just, and especially, like, I think she would have been served better to maybe have a feud with Oscar herself. And the way they're going with Oscar, it seems like she's having a feud with Nia Jax. And I think Nia Jax is someone that definitely could use the belt.
I think Nia Jax is, yeah, I mean, that's good for her development. And Dana Brooke was her first feud, but, you know, Asuka's first feud. So, but I mean, she just, she needs time. It's not going to, she is everything that people right now aren't clamoring for in the women's division. And so in order to overcome that, you got to be really good. And she's not.
I think too, maybe they figured, well, it's either sink or swim. I would think too, if you're going to call someone up from the women's division, obviously Asuka is number one on our list, but I think Alexa Bliss is far more ready than Dana Brooke is.
I totally agree. Alexa Bliss though, I still think she's much better served as a baby face. Yeah. She's better. I mean, obviously, okay. Bailey then Asuka.
Right. Yeah. I think Bailey. I'm just thinking if you're just going to have the random, no pomp and circumstance kind of call up, then Alexa Bliss.
Even if you put Bliss, even though they have never experimented with it, even if you put Bliss with Emma instead of Dana Brooke, I think it'd be just fine.
I think it'd be fine too, you know? I thought Alexa Bliss is, I think she's ready. She has a look. Even as a heel, she has a little claw theme, the little skeleton metal hand theme on her hand. Maybe they're waiting to bring her up with Blake and Murphy. I don't know. It bars the question now, like, is it a matter of time if, I don't know how long Enzo's out for, but do we see Carmella come up just so Big Cass can have someone next to him? And I believe he's dating Carmelo anyways.
Yeah, they're a couple.
I would assume maybe they bring Carmella up, just she's not ready at all, though.
Not A, she's not ready at all, and B, I don't think they give a shit if somebody's dating somebody.
No, of course not, yeah. I think I think that's the main thing. It's frustrating because we've talked the theme of this with WWE and how many people are coming to the roster, and that's why I think the brand split just makes so much sense because it's going to give guys and gals the chance to develop their own art on a show that they know is theirs and not have to scramble for whatever rare time they get on Raw or SmackDown. There's still going to be people underneath, but I think it's a better split of the talent, you know?
You know, we're actually seeing guys like, we don't care about them because of how they've been booked, but we're actually seeing storylines for Fandango, R-Truth, and Gold. Like, those guys, good luck getting on TV when those other guys come back. Yeah. You know, good luck.
I mean, the Golden Truth angle is probably my worst angle of the year, but probably my most surprisingly entertaining angle of the year. Just because at times it's like, this is idiotic, but it somehow still goes and It just has its place. Mauro Ranallo always has the great quote that funny doesn't draw money, which I definitely believe in. But I think once in a while, it's like in a Marvel movie to a DC movie. Sometimes you just need that extra added little bit of laughter in the show to make it run a little bit better altogether.
Yeah. I think it was actually would have worked if they had done 6 weeks to 2 months earlier. I think there was the moment where I think the crowd was ready for them to come together, and they missed it. And
I agree.
I think
Mo.
Now the crowd doesn't care so much.
Because they keep on switching back and forth, and Goldust wants to do it, now he doesn't want to, and it's just like the he said, she said with the two of them. It's like, okay, we're ready for them to go together. Let's just do this already.
Drew it out too long, I think, to get it to where it could be.
We'll see what happens with Dana Brooke, and Apollo Crews, I hope you're right, Mo. I hope that they decide, we were wrong on this one. What's in and down? I like what happened with Baron Corbin other than the loss of Payback. I thought he got back on track with a win this week, and he looks really strong, and there's definitely a place for him.
Yeah, I think so, too. And you know what? But he also beat him, I think, is on Superstars or Main Event, one of the same show, basically.
I've also heard...
They had another rematch, and he beat Ziggler again, so...
We also talked about people going heel, and I doubt this will happen, but I've also heard that, to no one's surprise in this podcast, that Vince really, really likes Big Cass, and that he wouldn't mind just turning him to a singles act. Yep.
And that, folks, is why WWE will never get hot again.
Mm-hmm. Because the two of them, it's, again, I go back to that Dudley's thing, and The reason they broke up the Dudleys is because, oh, we wanted to shake up the draft. And it's really just a shake up to shake him up, and because they like big Cass because he's a big guy, but Cass by himself can't work because he's not a very good wrestler, and Enzo is not a good wrestler either. He's a great promo, but he's not a good wrestler.
They're, you know, they together accentuate each other's strength and hide each other's weaknesses.
Yep.
The small guy who can talk and has all the charisma and then can be bounced around the ring and sell, and then makes the hot tag to the huge, his huge buddy who you like because he's with this guy, is perfect. But it's gonna, they're both gonna get exposed apart, but Enzo will always be the more popular because he's the one with the charisma off. And the fact that Vince is a guy who's all about talking and charisma, that he can't see that, is like unbelievable.
I was actually pretty shocked that Big Cass, I'll go into this, and I want to get your opinion on this too, Joel. Were you shocked that Big Cass was put into a main event, especially going against so many big playoff games in both the NHL and the NBA and big baseball games that night too?
Joel, you there?
No.
Joel?
No, I don't think they care about the rating number at all. I think that...
Terrific.
I think they've kind
of... Total credits.
They have conceded that they're not going to win. I think this was honestly a Jericho call. I think Jericho wanted to work with Cass. I don't think he expected to close the show, but that was obviously a Vince choice because, like you said, Vince likes Big Cass, so he wants to kind of see what he looks like in the main event picture, wants to see that crowd reaction. The only reason...
The match never happened, though. The match never happened.
No.
It was just a tease that it would.
Yeah. The only reason Cass is where he is because him and Enzo's act works, but they have to be together for their act to work. One without the other, it just doesn't click, and I hope Vince realizes that before he takes something that could be a good little tag team that could be there for a couple years, be a fine act to have, and then decide to break it up and go, oh, we're going to turn it and push Cass to the moon, and it just fizzle out. Instead, keep them together, let them be the team that we know they can be, and just let them have some fun. They're not great in the ring. Enzo's better on the mic. Just keep it the way it is. Sometimes it's better to keep things the way they are, and Enzo and Cass are one of those things.
You do have to love the WWE for this, that here we are in this day and age with the digital world where we can Google things and this and that. And they still go with the idea, a 6'8" guy, seven foot. You know, a 6'5" guy, like Baron Corbin, 6'8". You know, like everything's still, they still add that 3 or 4 inches. Like,
well, even though there was something revealed, I don't know who it was against, but Cass had some promo in the back, and I think it was with Steph, and he looked even taller than what he would look like. And it was revealed that they put him on top of an apple box to make him look even taller.
That's what they used to do with Andre.
Yeah,
they used to put Andre on an apple box. Even so, Andre would be sitting. It didn't matter if he was talking to Mean Gene Okerlund or if he was next to the One Man Gang, because he was only a legit 6'9". You know, and he's billed as much bigger. They used to put him on an apple box. And Big Cass is a legit 6'8". Baron Corbin's a legit 6'5". And, you know, as usual, it's just the exaggeration. The worked heights in, like I say, just to me in 2016 seems a little ridiculous.
I would agree. And I think that's going to be a wrap. Mo, joke away.
Oh, you know I like to end with a joke. You guys want to hear a joke?
No, but you're going to do it anyways.
Yes, you're right, I am. So this old guy goes to see his doctor, you know. And because, you know, he just married. He just married a 25-year-old beautiful woman. And he's having a little trouble performing. So he decides, he goes to see his doctor. His doctor sends him home with the famous little blue pills, you know. And the guy comes back 4 days later. And he says, I tried the pills. They didn't work. They're no good. I tried. I was using my hands. I couldn't do it. It was, you know, the wife, she saw me, she wanted to help, she came in, she got her hands going, you know, she's losing her left hand and can't get, and then, you know, I had my hands down, both hands, and she had both hands, she's using both of them, and then she tried, you know, using her mouth then, and, you know, and it's both hands and her mouth, and my, and her sister's staying with us this week. Her sister came in too. She saw the trouble we were having. She wanted to help. Her sister got in there with her hands, and her sister used her mouth, and no good. The doctor says, you know what? I got to be honest with you. I can't believe it. I'm hearing this, and I don't even understand with, you know, the two women going at it like that with you, why we'd even need the pills. He goes, neither. I told you, going at it, what are you talking about? I just told you how much trouble we're having getting the lid off the cap. No?
Ba-da-bum-bum-bum.
No? The lid off the bottle? The cap off? No?
Yeah, it was a riot.
You're welcome.
Until next time, thanks everyone for listening to Fresh Take. For Joshua Adam, I am Arbuthnot, Joel Johnson, and the hilarious Mo. Cheers. And enjoy the day, people.